Right. So I'm Claire, sex and love addict. This is my first time at this meeting and first time doing a lead share, so thanks for being gentle. Appreciate it. Yeah, I've been in SLA for going on, well, a little more than a year now, and actively working the steps and working with a sponsor for probably about 10 months at this point. So I'm in whatever phase of recovery that makes me, but excited to share what I've experienced so far and hope that it's helpful or at least interesting to those of you that are here. So starting from where I think this all came from, I was raised in the Midwest by a mom from Ecuador and a dad from rural Wisconsin, and I joke that the only thing they had in common was that they were both extremely Catholic. So I also grew up extremely Catholic. That was not something I could avoid. And it was something that was really important to me growing up. As a kid, my faith meant a lot to me. So it was both this source of incredible comfort, but also incredible anxiety. And I think that tension has sort of been the through line of my life and my addiction and also my recovery. Just this deep, deep desire to know God and know a higher power and to turn my life over to God. And also this deep anxiety and fear that it's just not really possible, that that's not really going to work, or he's not really out there, and it's just me. I just got to figure this out on my own. So I grew up very much wanting to be kind of a good Catholic girl, wanting to do the things that pleased my family, wanting to do the things that were considered right and good. But at my heart, I had kind of this deep restlessness and deep craving for adventure and novelty and validation and intrigue and all of those things. And so what that tension led me to was I was growing up just too afraid to engage in the same sorts of kind of playful behavior around love and relationships that a lot of my peers were involved in, but I still deeply wanted it. And so that tension was really hard for me. It meant that as all my peers were having crushes and dating around and doing whatever, I was kind of secretly in the corner obsessing over one person for years at a time, because that felt safe and that felt not across the line of what was allowed by my faith or what my parents would agree or not agree with. And this carried over into college and into my relationships after college, where I was a serial monogamist. I had a couple of really long-term, really serious relationships, but I was living sort of this double life where on the surface, I was committed to these people. I stayed with them for years at a time. I was a good partner. I did all the right things. I was of service. I listened to their problems. We kind of built lives together. We went through all the motions, but in my heart, I had kind of this deep fear and this deep restlessness, and it started to come out in ways that I wasn't really aware of. I developed really debilitating crushes and inappropriate relationships with coworkers, with friends, with housemates, and I hid so well from myself that even though I'm a compulsive journaler, maybe some of you can relate, I have pages and pages and pages where I'll go back and I'll look, and it's like I was lying even to myself, even in the places where you'd think you would be the most vulnerable and the most open and the most honest with yourself and your God and anything else. It was full of all of this like coaching talk, like, well, you just have to get over it, or, you know, he's really a good man, just stick with it. Like, I know you're bored, but it's going to be okay. You know, God will take care of you, da, da, da. I didn't believe any of it. And so I just kept living this double life. I couldn't fully commit to anyone. On the surface, it looked like I did. Why would I have a commitment issue when I stayed with the same person for 8 years, right? Mm-hmm. But deep inside, I was really, really just in turmoil and channeling it into these kind of destructive, just up to the line relationships. And I had them everywhere. I had so many people in my back pocket. And you would think that this, what I'm about to describe, was my rock bottom, and it wasn't. But I was engaged to this partner of 8 years, and 2 months before the wedding, I just went on this bender. I told no one where I was going. I flew to Seattle. I acted out. I came back so delusional that I thought, oh, I figured out the solution. It's that me and this person I've been with for 8 years, we just need to have an open relationship. That's what was wrong all along. Like, I'm just not built for monogamy. Let's figure it out. And a housemate of mine said, you need to do something. You need to get into therapy and you need to talk to this person. And so that was the beginning of therapy. But we called off the wedding, maybe obvious. But It wasn't until a few years later, I moved to Los Angeles, and I was still kind of operating under the assumption that if I did enough therapy, if I kept going to church, if I kept talking to all my friends about this stuff, like eventually it would just work itself out. Or maybe I would meet the right person where I wouldn't feel this way anymore. I wouldn't have this deep dissatisfaction with my life. And that pain just really was pulling me apart because I wanted these things that, honestly, you know, sound a little square, like I wanted to be a wife, I wanted to be a mother, I wanted to be a creative, I wanted to be a teacher, I wanted all these things. And every time the opportunity to have them came up, I would blow something up, I would sabotage, I would hurt people. And so these delightful people who wanted to commit to me, I held them emotionally hostage because I couldn't let them go. I couldn't say, you know what, I'm not ready for this, but neither could I say, let's do this, let's go ahead and commit. So even coming to LA 3 years ago, I told myself, okay, Claire, it's time to, you have to be single. Now is really the time. So I knew enough to know that that was a problem. But this is where the steps in the program and just the whole framework comes in. I was powerless to do it on my own. I tried everything. I tried to have friends hold me accountable. I was journaling like mad. I was still in therapy. I was on medication. I was really trying everything. And it didn't matter. I would just keep crawling back to these people, friends, ambiguous friends, people where it's like, will they, won't they? And it filled my mind. I think part of the reason I resisted something like SLA for so long was that on the surface, it seemed like my life was manageable. You know, I had a decent job, I was of service, I had a community, I had friends. But my mind was full of like, where am I getting my next fix? How am I avoiding like this deep pain and this honestly low self-esteem that I've discovered I have? And it wasn't until a little more than a year ago where the final string of relationships caught up to me. I was juggling two people at once. I straight up lied to one, really hurt him. I realized that for me, my rock bottom was realizing I made a cold, calculated decision to cheat on someone. It wasn't impulsive. It was a, like, I sat there and I thought about it and I said, I'm going to do this because I know this other person will come crawling back. And that was when I realized I couldn't face myself anymore. I couldn't continue to say, you know, I love God and I love being a good person and I love all these things if inside there's something so broken and so hurting that that was my solution, was to just use people. So I made it to these meetings. I was resistant at first, like I said. I did not identify as an addict. I didn't want to. I was like, well, my life is sort of put together. Like, why would I do this? And it took a long time, and it took a lot of time, like, looking at step one and returning to questions again and again and filling pages, thank you, that I realized, no, I am powerless over this because I'm in my mid-30s, and all these things that I say I want and have had the opportunity to get, I've just sabotaged every single one of them. And I'm deeply unhappy, and I'm deeply lonely, even though I'm surrounded by people, and I'm surrounded by community and friends. So this brings me to what my recovery has looked like in the years since then. I went through withdrawal in a very, I threw everything I had at it. I cut off contact with the people that I was seeing at the time when everything blew up. I approached my step work questions like, okay, this is gonna save me, I'm gonna do this. But I will say that the thing that has maybe most made a difference, I went to so much therapy and I go to church and I do all these things, but the thing about therapy is that it's one-on-one, and I think the idea is that if you talk enough about your problems, eventually you feel differently and then you'll act differently. It's almost like that's the equation. It's gonna go like that. Maybe artists can relate to this. I am very emotionally aware. I'm very emotionally communicative, and that wasn't enough. I had almost made that my higher power. Like, I'm so articulate. Surely I can talk my way out of a paper bag. I can figure this out. No. What I had to do was exactly the opposite, and my sponsor helped me to do this. I needed to act differently first, before I wanted to, before I felt like it, before I thought I could even do it. And through acting differently, eventually my thoughts and feelings started to change. And that was the miracle. That was God's grace. I had no idea that was even possible. I will say that I have had to really rework my relationship with God. despite having some love for God throughout most of my life, I realized there was still this very scared child in me that was scared of punishment and judgment and eternity of nothing, right? And I had to come to terms with, if I believe at all that this framework is going to work for me, I have to believe in God that's bigger than all of that. I have to believe in a God that is big enough to hold every single mistake I've made, every single person I've hurt, and thank you, I'll wrap up, that wants me to be healthy and whole, and most importantly, be of service to others, because to me, that's what keeps me going, is I need to free up space inside myself to then be of service and be available to others with my whole heart, not just half of it. So thank you for letting me share. We have now come to the sharing portion of our meeting. We honor people's time by not commenting, not interrupting, or addressing them during their share. Members are reminded that this is a 12-step meeting based on the 12 steps and traditions.